Hello, dear souls, and welcome back to this next segment. And of course, the sirens go off immediately.
Yes.
To this next segment of our Way of the Yogi meeting. It is Sunday, June 26th, 2011. I'm Zanna Harris.
I'm Deborah Barclay.
And I'm Katie Mulligan.
And we are here on this beautiful, well, it was sunny, summer Seattle day.
Yeah.
And we are in the middle of our discussion on practice and detachment. So let's just settle back again for a moment and reorganize our thoughts, bring ourselves back into the room. Slow the breathing, calm the mind. Coming together in the spirit of seeking, mind to mind, heart to heart, and soul to soul. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste. All right, so we were speaking of practice in our last segment, and in this segment we'll be talking about the other wing on the bird, which is detachment. So I've heard of practice and detachment metaphorically described as the two wings of a bird. Without one or the other, the bird cannot fly.
Right?
So I also likened it this morning. I was talking to a friend of mine to the tracks of a train. So you have the two tracks, the wheels of the roll train, the wheels of the train roll on, and you need both tracks for the train to be able to
ride.
Travel.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and
I love that with the carrots.
crunch. And it's very important that we have practice, but practice of what?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Practice of detachment, because that's basically what we're going for. Is that stilling
right.
of the mind.
Right.
And in order to do that, we have to have the non-attachment. We have to be able to disconnect from all of those things that are pulling us outward constantly. Constantly. So Sutra 115, Drishta Anusravika Visaya Vitrinasya Vasikarasamya Varagyam.
That's a tough one.
Yes, it was. That was a mouthful.
That first word is intense.
Yeah, Drista. It's like no vowels.
I wonder if that's like Dristi.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's focus.
Nice.
Okay.
Yeah, focus. Yes, absolutely. Or actually, perceptible here is the, So Drista. Yeah, Dristi is to see.
Yeah,
To see, yeah. It's what you're looking at, so when the mind loses all desire for objects seen or described, and here it specifies in the scriptures.
Oh, interesting.
It acquires a state of utter desirelessness, which is called detachment. Ooh, I have an idea on why it says that. Anyway, go ahead. That's Visaya. Or Aranya.
Aranya. Iyengar says, renunciation is the practice of detachment from desires.
And Satchidananda says, the consciousness of self-mastery is one who is free from craving for objects seen or heard about is non-attachment.
Swami Jay says, when the mind loses desire, even for objects seen or described in a tradition or in scriptures, it acquires a state of utter desirelessness that is called non-attachment. Interesting.
Interesting.
So that means that even the desire to become free from desire.
You have to detach from that too.
You have to detach from that too. So even the quest that we're on now.
Yeah.
Reading our scripture of the sutras. We must also detach from that as well. Mm-hmm. There should be no ambition whatsoever.
Yeah.
No goal, no striving. Although we should practice diligently.
Yeah. Because this one makes a nice little disclaimer. It says non-attachment should not be misunderstood to be indifference.
Right.
So you've got to have still that balance of, you know, you want it, but you don't want to be attached to it. It's
to wanting it.
Seems so subtle. Like
It is very subtle.
The differences between that.
It's very subtle. It's, I liken it to... If I were not diligent about working out and diet and what I eat, what I put in my mouth and everything, I have my genetics. I have a proclivity towards being obese. And that's just the way it is. That's the way my family is. But I because I have this knowledge of that and an awareness of that, and I practice ahimsa, non-harming to myself, first of all, which I know means that what I put in my mouth can either help me or harm me, depending on what it is, I'm not indifferent. Although I'm not attached to dieting, like, as far as, you know, I need all the fad diets and all that, and I don't go running like for hours on end, but I do work out regularly, and I do watch what I eat, and and so if I'm not indifferent, but I'm also not attached, like, you know, it's obsessively, like I could be, so I think that could apply in that sense.
That makes sense.
In a way.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. If that, I hope that made sense.
Yeah, no, it definitely made sense.
That might be a good example. It's very important. I think one of the most important precepts that applies to this is the niyama of santosha, which is contentment. And contentment, again, is not complacency.
Right.
Contentment is to know that what I have in this moment is what I need.
Yeah.
Everything I need is here.
Yep.
There's nothing out there that I have to, that I can't live without right now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, santosha, for detachment or for non-attachment, is absolutely prerequisite or requisite.
Yeah.
And it's true. We do. We have always everything that we need. A friend of mine the other day, she's a, how would you say it? Codependence, kind of a harsh word. It's kind of cliche at this point too. But she's of that type of kind of makeup where she's a caretaker.
Right.
She takes care of people.
Right.
And she takes care of people to the point of not taking care of herself sometimes.
Right, right.
And it's, I had to remind her that sometimes we do people a disservice in not allowing them to fight their own battles.
Yeah.
Because then they don't grow stronger. They don't have the opportunity to
benefit
by the challenges that they're presented in life.
Yeah.
And we always, at all times, have everything we need to meet those challenges.
Yeah.
We're never given any more than we can handle. And we can handle a lot. Human beings are very resilient.
Yeah.
We're very resilient.
I heard a, this is kind of just a joke, but I heard a little quote that said, you know, we're never, it's about, like, a religious, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's like, God only gives us what we can handle, and I understand that, but I just wish he didn't trust me so much.
That's great.
I like that. That is cute. But it's so true. We have everything we need right now.
Yeah.
There's nothing in life. I don't live in, you know, a beautiful 10,000 square foot penthouse condominium. Yeah. I don't drive a Jaguar. But do I need those things?
No. And some would say in the society, especially if you live in a city like LA, that you do. But, right. You know, we have our values, you know.
It's so skewed.
Yeah, it's so skewed.
So skewed.
It's so skewed.
I see on TV where people are spending $2 million on an action figure because it's a collectible or whatever, you know, from whatever, which is totally just a metaphorical, but something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? That $2 million could do so much.
Yeah,
seriously.
For so many people.
Yep.
And yet that little action figure is going to sit somewhere and gather dust.
And it's never going to, I think the seeker always thinks that, you know, each immediate sort of purchase or whatever
gratification.
It is, that it's going to somehow improve their life significantly, change their life somehow, or will give them a better status in life or whatever it is. And that's a need that will never be satiated through that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's sort of this vicious cycle that never ends and feeds on itself.
That's
and,
right.
You know, it's just, it's a road to nowhere.
That's right.
Yeah.
I know almost everything that I have so desperately wanted that is an outside material object.
Yeah.
That was so important to me at any given time.
Yeah.
I can't name, and I know those things existed.
Yeah.
But I can't actually name one of those things now because that's how important they actually were.
Yeah. Right. Know? And at the time you think it's everything.
It's everything.
Yeah.
And now it's, I'm still here.
Yeah.
My life is going just fine.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember what it was.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So how important was it really?
Exactly.
And yet I am here. So obviously there's something here that really is important that I do need to take care of to really get to know, because this is forever.
Yep. And when you're in touch with
this,
your inner self, mm-hmm. and the this.
And I'm pointing to my inner self when I'm doing this, for those of you who can't see.
Yeah. When you're in touch with that inner self and you sort of, you discover this capability to transcend the day-to-day sort of stresses and strains and temptations, you realize that that need that you thought was inside of you is really just your imagination. I mean, you're not really feeding anything. There is no need for, you know, I have to have this Jaguar or what have you. And I think it's, you know, when you get in touch with that inner self is when, that's when you realize, actually, that need doesn't even exist.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I was being so controlled by this thing that I thought, you know, this desire inside
mm-hmm.
of me, it's actually not even there. I'm making it up in my head.
That's right. And again, and then that feeds back into those mental fluctuations. As soon as we have that idea in our head, it doesn't even have to be a real thing.
Right.
The body secretes the hormones, we react,
yeah,
everything just
right.
happens as if it were there.
Right.
And it was actually,
yeah,
you know, a real thing. So it's just being able to have the gift of this awareness of that,
yeah,
is so precious. And it brings us that much closer to that tranquil, peaceful state that we're seeking.
Yeah.
Which is such a gift. I love it. So there's actually steps to these this detachment. There's gradual steps. It's not about just sitting down and say, okay, I'm going to detach. That's it. Everything just move away.
Yeah. Flip a switch. I wish it were. If only it were that easy.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that
be
great?
Wouldn't it be nice? And that's where actually our yamas, our niyamas, our asana, our pranayama, our pratyahara, all of these things, that's where all of these things come in, is we learn to gradually detach by becoming aware of non-harming, non-stealing, non-lying, and so on and so forth, and then going into contentment, cleanliness, and purity, so we're not distracted by our environment,
mm-hmm.
and then on and on through the niyamas. And then the asana teaches us our physical body and how to actually not react to all of the twinges and twitches and stiffnesses and tensions and all of that.
Yeah.
And actually how to inhabit the body fully as well.
Yep.
So that it doesn't just go off and, you know, we're not talking swinging our arm somewhere and,
right.
you know, suddenly slam into a wall or something and, you know, take off a big chunk of skin, create accidents.
Yeah. Not good.
Not good. So that we move more mindfully.
Mm-hmm.
We learn to be mindful in our movements. And then that begins to seep into our emotional body and our mental body and the mindfulness. Everything, it just all builds one on the other, one on the other. So Iyengar actually has five steps in his, in 115 there, where he goes through the steps of disengaging. So one, disengaging from the senses, disengaging the senses from enjoyment of their objects and controlling them is yatamana. As it is not possible to control all the senses at once, one should attempt to control them one by one to achieve mastery over them all. So disengaging the eyes from looking at pleasurable things,
mm-hmm.
okay. this nose from smelling good smells,
mm-hmm.
the ears from hearing pleasant sounds, the skin from feeling, you know, sensuous feelings, velvet and silk, and,
mm-hmm.
and let's see what else have we got. So touch, smell, sight, sound, hearing, and taste.
The taste of these
delicious
pita chips.
She's crunching away over there.
Perfect timing.
And taste, right. Right. And so what this means, I would assume, is to practice. Maybe not austerity, that might be a little harsh word,
mm-hmm.
but just not indulging so much.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep.
Cutting down on the indulgences a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then by thoughtful control, one burns away desires which obstruct Chitta's movement toward the soul, which is those desires of the jaguar and the condo and the... Right.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's Vyatirika. When the five senses of perception and the five organs of action, which are the indriyas, have been weaned away from contact with objects, and we'll go over the indriyas in the next sutra, the feeblest desires remain in a causal state and are felt only in the mind. This is ekindriya, so one sense is left, and that's the sense of desire itself. Itself. The mind wants to play a dual role, to fulfill the desires of the senses and also to experience self-realization. So once the senses have been silenced, the mind moves with one-pointed effort towards soul realization. So does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Vasikara is attained when one has overcome all longings and developed indifference to all types of attachment. Non-attachment and detachment. So all 11 senses have been subjugated. So Vasikara is not just non-attachment. It's beyond attachment, non-attachment, and detachment. It's something else even than that. Vasikara is an elevated state beyond detachment. From these develops paravairagya, the highest form of renunciation. It is free from the qualities of sattva, rajas, and tamas. So remember we talked about rajas being the state of motion, of it's the state of creation.
Yeah.
And tamas is the state of inertia or destruction.
Okay.
And then sattva is the state that perpetuates or of tranquility and light.
Lightened. Okay.
Remember we talked about those three, the three gunas?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
Right.
And the three make up nature. It takes those three things to make up the material world, okay. Creation, destruction, and sustain.
Yeah.
The creation and the destruction.
Yeah.
So without those three, we don't have matter.
Right.
Right. So with Paravaragya, we rise above even that. We're not just even looking for the middle ground. Hmm. We're looking to rise above that even.
Yeah.
So that there is no duality, there is no centrality. It's all one thing.
Yeah.
And it's all no thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's almost too much for the human mind to fathom because
we
are so limited because our perception is of what we can see, what we can smell, what we can taste, what we can feel, what we can hear.
Yeah.
And this is how we define everything.
Yeah.
So to really be trying to conceive of these concepts.
Yeah. Well, and those things are so useful.
They're so
too.
Etheric and so esoteric, you know. Yeah.
You know,
it's a hard thing to do. It's a hard thing to reach for. It's almost intangible, but we know we can touch it because we know it's there because of what we experience and the little tastes we get.
Yep.
Yeah. We know it is there. So on attaining this state, the sadaka or the seeker, sadaka means seeker, ceases to be concerned with himself or wish others who remain caught or with others who remain caught in the web of pleasure. So those are the five steps to full, even past detachment.
Okay.
Okay, to full renunciation.
Okay.
Now, this is like probably lifetimes away. I know, at least for me.
Yeah.
All right. But just the fact that we know this and that we're aware of it.
Yep.
Propels us on the path.
Yep.
Because we become aware of this and because we're actually interested in it and we're drawn to it, that means that we are on the path.
Right.
I would think.
Yeah, it seems that way because we're striving towards it.
Yep, right. We're striving towards it. And
yeah, even if it's a small step.
And to be content, I think, to be where we are in our journey.
Yeah. Because it's really about the journey, isn't it?
It really is about the journey. I'm not so concerned to be cut away from the wheel of karma.
Right.
That I have to achieve enlightenment in this lifetime.
Right.
Because I already know it's not going to happen.
Yep.
The more I read, the more that I experience, the more I know how far at the beginning I am in this journey and how long I have to go.
Yeah.
That I'm not even, there's no way that I'm even remotely going to aspire to full enlightenment in this lifetime. It's just not going to happen. But I'm really happy.
Yeah.
That I can at least
strive towards it.
And that I can know that it's there.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the far-flung future, you know, my soul, even though it's not going to be this consciousness that is along for the journey at that point, my soul is going to be, it's going to reach that point at some point.
Yeah.
And that is just such a huge
comfort.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
It really is a cool thing. Don't squeeze tears in my eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you, Patanjali.
Thank you, Patanjali.
So anybody have anything on that one?
No, those are so much to think about.
It really is. It's huge.
Yeah.
It is huge.
Yeah.
It is huge. Thank goodness we have an eternity to reach for. Yes. It.
Thank goodness.
This is going to take at least that long. Time.
Yeah. I'm still working on like desirelessness.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, 116. Tatparam. Purusha kyati guna vaitrisnyam. Ooh, okay. And Iyengar?
Iyengar says that the ultimate renunciation is when one transcends the qualities of nature and perceives the soul.
Satchidananda is when there is non-thirst for even the gunas due to realization of the purusha, that is supreme non-attachment.
Aranya, indifference to the gunas or to the constituent principles achieved through a knowledge of the nature of the purusha is called paravairagya, supreme detachment. And Swami Jay says, indifferent to the subtlest elements, constituent principles, or qualities themselves, achieved through a knowledge of the nature of pure consciousness, is called supreme non-attachment. So this is where we get into the indriyas, the tanmatras, and this is the stages of involution, stages of vairagya, or detachment, and the involution of prakriti. So prakriti is evolution. It's nature. Okay. It's the manifest world. All right. It's everything around us that pulls us outward, that we want to attach to and identify with.
Mm-hmm.
And think that this is me, you know. I am sick.
Mm-hmm.
I am happy.
Yeah. I am rich.
I am poor. Yes. I am a yoga teacher. I am a lawyer. I am a mother. I am a, you know, whatever I am.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is not what we are. Not
definitely
at all.
Lower.
I mean, I am, but that better not define me.
So we have to, again, we have to turn that back around and
mm-hmm.
go back within.
Yep.
So involute the prakriti.
Yep.
Okay. And so we do that by disengaging from our senses of action, keeping away from desires, stilling the mind. Okay, so that's the specific act, the specific ways, things we do. Okay, and those involve the 11 indriyas. The 11 indriyas are the doorways, basically. Okay, well, actually, 10 of them are the doorways.
Right.
The doorways of the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth.
Mm-hmm.
Eyes, ears, nose, mouth. And excretory organs.
Those are very useful.
Yes, they are. Okay.
And necessary.
So those are the those are the doorways. Let me see. Those are the doorways outward or inward? So hold on. I have it right here. See, this is where I start going It's terrible. Come on. Back to the top. There we go. Okay, let's go here and then three. Yeah, there we go. Okay. Come on. It's not doing it now. Okay, so anyway, I can't find it right now. So we have the indriyas, which are the doorways. And then we have both inward and outward. So we have the karmendriyas, and so those are the karmendriyas, the organs of. Oh no, okay. Those are the jnanendriyas, the organs of perception and knowledge. Okay, and then we have the karmendriyas, the organs of action, which are the hands, the feet. Ew, no, I got this all wrong. I had it down. So anyway, there's 10 of those. And I sound completely stupid right now, but
there's a lot to be said
for writing notes, and I'll have this down next time, I promise. And this, and we're just actually introducing this one, so I haven't really.
We can come back.
Yeah. Yeah. This is what we're coming. Yeah. We'll come back to the second section on the first section of the next podcast.
Great.
Always, that's how we do it. So we kind of introduce this section, and then we come back after we contemplate on it and work with it and try to see what we experience with, you know, with what we discuss. So I will learn more about the Andreas, I promise, for next podcast. And so when we could transcend the qualities of nature, so all of these organs of action, these sensory perceptions, the tanmatras, which are the actual sounds, the actual tastes, the actual sights, the actual feelings, and what they consist of, not what we touch and hear and taste and smell with.
Okay.
Okay, so it's the thing itself. Okay. So that we master desires over those. And then supreme detachment is then the paravairagya, which we probably won't get to in within this lifetime, but but at least we'll know what it is and that it is there.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what something where the journey is leading toward. I hesitate to say working toward, because again, that implies attaching to a goal.
Right.
So the journey is leading us toward that state.
Yeah.
I think that's a better way to say it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Well, at least I said something that makes sense.
I said a lot that made sense today.
All right. So does anybody have anything else on detachment as far as...
Well, I think it's interesting that potentially in Iyengar's version talks about he uses as an example just disentangling oneself from habits such as drinking coffee or smoking, and then he says, you know, that's sort of the lowest rung of renunciation, but that once you... renunciate that, you often identify yourself with being a non-coffee drinker or a non-smoker, and that's a form of attachment in and of itself as well.
Right. To the same thing.
Right. And so he says that really when you transcend that is when you are indifferent to it one way or the other, which I think is kind of that sort of helps me to understand.
It's a great metaphor.
What's being said in this one.
It's a very... very simple, easily relatable analogy to the larger, more huge process that's actually going on with non-attachment.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just coffee or cigarettes.
Right.
I mean, that's we're talking about, like everything in life.
Exactly.
Here,
right? I mean, that's just the very, sort of, very, very micro.
So, it's. I think it's also important, though, to really... to remember that non-attachment isn't indifference. So, although we're not wanting to have these desires, these driving ambitions that pull us and push us constantly, it is still important to have that concern for the self, in that we do still inhabit this physical world.
Right.
And it is important that we are able to maintain ourselves within it.
Yeah.
And to do so in a way that is conducive to our being able to continue our course of study.
Yeah.
And our seeking. Mm-hmm. And so we still have to do the things that allow us to maintain, our lifestyle.
Right.
So it's just a matter of how much of the lifestyle is necessary.
Right.
And how much is superfluous.
Right.
You know, what is pertinent to our true path.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets really murky and really hard sometimes.
Yeah.
That's where practice, I think, comes in. And listening and stilling the mind and listening to our that inner voice
mm-hmm.
of truth and reason. You know, the jnana jnanamaya kosha, vijnanamaya kosha, that deep body of intuition.
Yep.
That's going to say, no, you don't need to put in an extra 20 hours a week so you can afford that, you know, pair of high heels or
right.
or that car or whatever, you know, your Volkswagen's fine. You don't need the, you know,
yeah.
You don't need the Prius.
Yeah. You know? And it's amazing, sort of like you were saying earlier, just knowing that something is there. I mean, it's so amazing to know that we do have an inner voice that does guide us, that
mm-hmm.
we actually need to turn to and listen to. It's telling us what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And so many people spend their entire lives not ever
ignoring
getting
it.
In touch
yeah.
with that and ignoring it.
Mm-hmm.
I know phases in my life where I've ignored it, and I know that it's been a great source of anxiety
mm-hmm.
to me. And it's, you know, if there's something that I've learned, it's you really need to listen to your gut and
mm-hmm.
go with your gut and
mm-hmm.
have the courage to do that and have the faith to know that
mm-hmm.
that voice, that
right.
gut is actually
at center.
It's correct, you know, that we don't need to be, I think I know, you know, in the past, in a sort of convenient fashion for myself, I thought, you know, I could repress it and that maybe it wasn't telling me the right thing that I, you know, that maybe it was wrong and I would, you know,
mm-hmm.
I knew better, you know?
Yeah.
In fact, I did know better, but I was listening to the wrong voice.
Right.
There are a lot of
the
voices
wrong
up
eye,
there.
The
yeah.
wrong eye. The voices in my head told me to do it.
Yeah.
It was the voice in your heart you should have been listening to.
Exactly. Yep.
Okay, so next time we will come back to the last two, actually. I think that's all we're going to do is these two today. 15
and 16.
15 and 16. So we will, for the next few weeks, what we're going to do is pay attention to what's going on in our lives around us and see where we can apply our practice.
Yeah.
And that's not just sitting down and doing meditation. That's applying the practice of all of the principles of yoga in our lives. And where we can listen to that voice
yeah.
and see where we can detach a little
yeah.
bit. And maybe kind of weed out some of the superfluous stuff
yeah.
in our lives. What is really necessary? What can we maybe divest ourselves of
yeah.
to make the path a little clearer?
Absolutely.
And we'll come back and share our experiences with that. And we'll also, in the second half, let's see. I should have looked at this before. We will look at, so we will look at 17. We will look at 18. And 19 and 20 as well. We'll probably take four. Yes, we'll take the next four.
Great.
Okay.
So
okay.
All right. So that will conclude this episode of Way of the Yogi of our meeting. And though the journey is long and arduous, and we do have each other to walk the road together with, we still must do the work, each in and of ourselves. And it's very comforting to know, though, that we have the support of one another.
Yep.
As we follow this path.
Yeah.
Yeah. So thank you very much for being here today. It's really been a good conversation. I'm really And we have still the website www.wayoftheyogi.com. And I've worked on it a little bit, but we're
nice.
It will hopefully grow.
That too is a process.
It's a process. It's all a process. I'm not sure when our next meeting is going to be because lots going on in July.
Yeah.
So we'll see if July is even going to happen. It might not be until August.
Yeah.
when we can maybe have James come in as well.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Let's see if
we can do that. I think he would actually have a lot to say on this next little section of the next four that we're talking about.
Yeah.
So I think he would probably be a really good resource.
Okay, yeah.
So I'll do everything I can to entice him.
And if not, then we will suffice.
Yeah.
Yes, we will. Yeah. Absolutely.
We can always do it. Make sure we do it after this retreat.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
And that way, you'll have some insights from there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
And you may have more insights for us
on
that's
preparation
good.
For the delivery.
Right.
Yay. How excited! I would be terrified. I've never had a child, and I'm past that point now. So
it's a lot of emotions. Yeah. But mostly, I think I'm getting excited, but sometimes I'm a little scared, but that's part of it, I guess.
All right, so walk in peace, everyone, and we will be back. Namaste.
Namaste.
Namaste.